So we want to take a look back at the season. We have now completed our first season of Beauty Ever New, and it's kind of unbelievable. Who would have thought that we would have actually done it? I mean, at one point, it seemed like it was never going to happen because it was, you know, we had to get a website up and we had to figure out how to get the hosting up and we had episodes to record. And then it all came together just before Christmas and we were off.
Yeah. So podcasts, they seem like they're super duper easy. They're like, you know, if you've ever done like a WordPress website or something like that, you can have it, you know, in a few clicks, you can have a website blog of your own. You can make an email, you can do all this stuff. And podcasts are more like that than like traditional media. But it takes a lot of freaking time to set it up. Like,
yeah.
And
just to get the hang of it.
There are all sorts of like, you know, there are these questions. You go online and ask someone in some forum, I want to start this podcast. What should my host be? And how should I record? And what should I edit the software on? And what frequency? And you have to make lots of decisions before you do anything. So yeah, we like chugged through that. So that was good.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was, I mean, even once you figure out how to hit record, you know, you're going to have all these little mishaps that happen and you have to figure out how to overcome them. And
yeah,
you know, somebody's mic was turned off or,
oh my gosh,
or the connection wasn't good.
Have to buy an app to save 2 hours of static infested conversation.
Yeah.
Which is pretty great, by the way.
Yeah, that was amazing.
We live in an era where you can mess something up and then just like someone's written a piece of software to fix it.
I know.
Probably.
I mean, in a bygone era, like you were just out of luck.
Yeah. So we're going to this episode. It'll be like our retrospective. We're not even done with recording all the episodes for the season, but it just will eventually be
published.
Well,
we're done recording.
We're done recording.
We haven't aired them.
Okay. We're not going to do the other one with the advertising guy.
No, that'll be next season.
Oh, okay, next season. So we're done recording this season. So we're gonna, you know, this will be a little bit of a retro. Talk about what we did and what we didn't do, and all that jazz.
Yeah. So, what conversation did you enjoy the most, or learn the most from, or what sticks in your mind?
So for the guests, this for some people this will be the first episode you listen to. And the quick recap is, so far we're at like 10 or 12 episodes, and we started off in the beginning of the season talking with Andrew Robinson about finance. Mm-hmm. He's a development director at Petrus, and he's like the president of Petrus. And we talked with Joe Earthman about death and dying and the experience of going through all of that, and the church's views on funerals and how we experience that aesthetically. We talked with Joseph Leano a couple of times about John Sr. and the restoration of realism and all the movement that happened at the IHP in Kansas.
Yep.
And all of the kind of outfall of really like the generation of leaders in the church, both in the Dominican world and elsewhere. There's that episode is called What Happened in Kansas, and there's a follow-up to that. Both of them are super interesting. And we talked with Michael Rea about architecture. He's an architect and specializes in liturgy and has a degree from the Liturgical Institute, where we also recorded an episode with Dennis McNamara. Mm-hmm. And that was about, you know, art and architecture. He's sort of the thought leader in architecture right now in Catholic academic circles. Talked to Michaela Barta about dance. She is a balletist, dancer.
Yes.
And she teaches dance at Incarnate Word here in Houston, and she often teaches classes on Pope St. John Paul II's letter to artists. So we talked a lot about that. Talked with Ryan Trussell, the sort of Indiana Jones mystery man, the kind of just like stay-at-home dad, artist.
Writer.
So a lot of views of the artist from that perspective. And Samuel Setbana, actually at the beginning of the season, about music, as a professional musician with Musica Humanum here in Houston. So we span the gamut from architects and artists and dancers and musicians and fundraisers and funeral directors.
Yeah.
And what Joseph's just like an interested academic liturgist scholar. Yeah. So it's Beauty Ever New is the name of the podcast, and we're architects, but really the people and the topics are quite varied, but it's not random. It's
no, No, and in fact, if we've learned anything, is that what makes good architecture is being well-rounded, is talking to all these people, learning from all these people, because ultimately good churches come out of the culture and it come out of a robust culture.
Yeah.
So I hope that one of the things that people get out of the podcast is that is how wide we have to be thinking if we want to fix our churches.
Yeah. Was there anything in your mind that you thought that you hadn't expected to be as good as it was, put it that way? Or that you just liked? I don't know. You can phrase the question however.
Well, I guess I was surprised by the quality of guests that we were able to get.
Yeah.
Because obviously starting out, you don't expect anyone to say yes.
Yeah.
You
know what I mean? Yeah.
We were just a couple of guys who were trying to talk about architecture. And
yeah.
I was surprised by the level of interest in architecture from all of our guests.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think all of them recognize its importance.
Yeah.
And they all were very willing and ready to talk about it and very supportive of what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
So I guess I was just surprised by the generosity of our guests and of the people that were willing to give us a couple of hours of their time. I mean, even Dennis McNamara, who, again, is a very busy
man.
He's
a busy dude, yeah.
And he was like, yeah, I mean, let's just talk. Let's see how long this goes, you know?
And yeah, we started that one, and he's like, well, how long do you want? And we're both, like, smiling in our, like do you have half a day? Because we'll take it.
I know. I mean, and so I guess people's willingness to talk to us and to just get into the deep subjects that a lot of time you just don't get to cover in other spaces. Yeah. That's what I was most pleased with.
Yeah. If you're listening and you're a guest, or you're the spouse of a guest who made time for that person to come.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. We've had lots of people who, our small little tribe is a loyal one. So
really good. For sure. Yeah. And I think for us, I mean, for both of us, this was not only an opportunity to share what we think, but more than that, it was to listen to other people and then to be able to share that conversation with many other people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I've learned a lot. You know, I feel like from when we started, we kind of had these ideas about church architecture, what it should be. And I feel like even though we're still in the middle of it, by no means have we reached any,
you
know, any conclusions.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have learned a lot,
mm-hmm.
and we've learned a lot about how we should be thinking about churches.
Totally.
That I think is very different than, you know, when we started.
Yeah.
But I mean, I know for you, the poetic mode was like a huge,
revelation. I mean, there's the one thing I have become obsessed with as of late is, the poetic mode thing, but, backing up into what may just totally like alienate lots of our listenership. There's this world of board game design that is not like Monopoly and Uno and all of those things. But it's this like, it's anytime I describe to someone the interest, they're like, board games? What? Like, are we four again? And, but, there's a whole world of people who are creating these new games, and they're strategy games, and they're really thoughtful, and they're really well designed, and they're you know, engaging at a level that you would not expect. And the people that are talking about it are creating a kind of vocabulary, and you know, there's a whole ecosystem of it that's really compelling. And one thing that they always talk about is every year more games are put out than the year before. And this year there's like, I don't know, thousands of board games, new board games that are designed that are worth your time and money. And it's the same with everything else. I've just been listening to it more as of late. Where they talk about there's got to be a hook, right?
Yeah.
The reality is you can't, not everyone can buy every game. And the same thing goes with every book and every movie. There's got to be a hook.
Yeah.
And unless there's a hook, it's not worth your time. And for me, the hook, we have a podcast and I have like 3 seconds to explain to you in one sentence why it's interesting. I think the episodes with Joseph talking about the IHP and the talk with John Sr. and the whole, you know, the Restoration of Realism book and everything, to me, that was probably the most formative idea that came out of the discussions.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. There were points in all of the discussions that I found really engaging and things I liked a lot. But if I had to abstract an idea and take it out and like put it in a jar and be a thing I want to look at every day, it would be that.
Yeah, I mean, it basically gave us this giant framework to base everything on. I mean,
yes.
It's such an all-encompassing theory that I feel like it's helpful in almost every facet of life, but especially when you're thinking about architecture and art, it all of a sudden gave you words and language that you just didn't have before to try to explain to people why it's important to have beautiful art.
Yeah. If you this is your first episode to listen to, feel free to stop this right now. Come back to it. Go to episode 2, What Happened in Kansas, and episode 10, The Poetic Mode. Episode 2 is about the story of the Integrated Humanities Program at Kansas State. The long and short of it is John Sr. basically realized the students were unable to be affected by this classic poetry and literature.
Yeah.
And like more or less said, we have to stop this. We need to like back up into nature and reintroduce you to what it means to be human.
Right.
And in the process, lots of the students converted to Catholicism. And not because it was proselytization, but because he was bringing them back into nature and they were reading great books and they were listening to these, you know, professors have conversations. And just that mode of listening and comprehending what was going on, like stirred their hearts. And, you know, when they converted to the church, people in such massive droves, like I don't know but a pretty significant number of people in the class converted. The school shut it down because they thought it was a cult.
Enough for the school to freak out.
Yeah. So, and the poetic mode is the sort of descriptor of something that John Sr., that's like his big contribution. So episode 10 is about the poetic mode specifically, not so much about the narrative of what happened in Kansas.
Yeah.
So go check those two episodes out.
Because that ends up becoming the scaffolding for the rest of the podcast.
Sure.
Which I don't think either of us intended that. I mean, in fact, I think Joseph had told me about the poetic mode before the podcast, but like very little.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had that conversation and it was like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, this is a life changer.
Yeah. It's like, for me, what I like about it, what I find most compelling about it is the poetic mode is something that enables you to be disposed to receive God. And if you aren't living in the poetic mode or receiving reality in the poetic mode, then it's through some other filter that's not real, and it's in some way abridged or mediated in some way that is less than the full stream of water hitting you. It's a little trickle. And in order for us to be disposed to all the graces God gives us and to be able to use them, we have to be in that mindset. And I was describing to my son the other day, I was trying to talk to him about what grace is. And, you know, this metaphor probably has lots of wrong with it, but I described it as when we were standing outside in the backyard, like kind of gardening.
Yeah.
I said, grace is kind of like a shovel, and you can be out here gardening, and do you think you're going to be able to garden and produce, you know, flowers and fruit and plants and things more effectively with your fingers or with a shovel? It's like, oh, well, with a shovel. I'm like, that's great. So if you pray for grace, do you think God's going to give you to? And he said, yeah. And then I said, but does the shovel dig by itself? And he goes, no. I'm just like indignant, like, Dad, that's ridiculous. I said, right. So if you pray for it, God will give you, you know, these special abilities you otherwise would not have, but it will not do the work for you.
Yeah.
And the poetic mode is like you know, like, with your like farming shirt on and ready to like get out and do your thing. And if you're like living in some other way, it's like you basically being unable to grab the shovel and unable to till the ground and unable to make use of the, you know, the tools God gives you.
Yeah.
It's like a precondition for, going into Mass and fully receiving it, or to even to like prayer or to appreciating God and nature.
Yeah. Yeah, and what's crazy is that it seems like it's some sort of philosophy that you need to adopt, right? Like it's something that you have to externally adhere to.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what John Sr. was trying to say is like, this isn't anything really that special. I mean, this is the way people lived for a very long time.
Yeah, yeah.
We have just, as a society, developed all these filters, all these... not filters, but all this insulation to the point that we are now in this bubble that we are actually separated from reality.
Yeah.
So all the poetic mode is trying to do is get you back to reality.
Yeah.
You know, it's not saying like you need to suspend reality or you need to like meditate and escape the world. It's the complete opposite. You need to experience the world as it really is.
Yeah.
And it is the society that we live in with, you know, with media and television and everything else that is making it harder and harder to just take in the world as it is. Mm-hmm. You know, you're always seeing it through a lens or through a filter.
Yeah.
And not through just your own two eyes.
Yeah.
So I think that to me was like the most striking thing about that whole conversation.
I hope by the time that this thing gets published, facial ID. I have a mic in front of my face and I'm using an iPad from work and it was in the way. So I had to like reach my head like a camel in front of the microphone so that I can look at the iPad and it opens up. First world problems here. By the time we publish this, I hope that Ryan Trussell, one of our guests, had talked about making a podcast called Senior Moments, it's all just him talking about John Senior.
That's it. Yeah.
No, hopefully we can put that in the show notes and nice it will have coupling. Been started.
Yeah.
So that was, for me, that was the main idea. Like all of them, like personally had different things that I liked drawn out. Like Michaela's discussion was really great.
That was a blast.
Yeah.
It was just so much fun.
Yeah. And other people's were there. There's none of them I disliked. Obviously we published all of them. That was really good.
Yeah.
And I have various interests in all of them, but, what was yours? If you had to like pull out something that of like a touchstone.
Yeah. Theme for me was, I mean, this is going to seem obvious, but like just learning how critical the liturgy was in the development of architecture, you know, from the 60s on,
mm-hmm.
and how critical it will be in the restoration of architecture.
Yeah.
For a while, I really thought it was just a problem of architecture. You know, like if we fix our churches, then we'll be good.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a matter of picking the right, you know, the right styles or the right statues.
Yeah.
Or,
get rid of the pastiche. You
know, right.
Design it right. Finally pay the right architect to do the thing.
That's right. Yeah. So for a while, I really did think that it was just, man, all these horrible architects were doing their thing. But I think that through all these conversations and through just my own study, I'm finding that the liturgy, as it developed after the Second Vatican Council, really had a big role to play in why churches ended up the way they did.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if we are going to climb back from that, it will be through the liturgy. It won't be because the hero architect is going to come
mm-hmm.
and save the day. It will be because as a church, we have you know, restored the liturgy. We have loved the liturgy and really, you know, promoted it.
Yeah.
And as a result, our churches will reflect that.
Yeah. Yeah. There are two trends that I don't know what you think about them, but I, over the course of probably definitely since we started the podcast and we spent a lot more time like thinking about it and talking about it and reading about it and having these discussions, very intentionally, was that, the more I think about it and not just like experience it, you know, the more in the sort of dialectic sense and not just like attending mass and praying and going through that part of life, I find myself less and less wanting to be on social media, even though that's like part of the podcast, you know, like our page, listen to us.
Right.
But I find myself wanting to like on Facebook and like, you know, Catholic Creatives page and like whatever else I'm doing that occupies some, you know, segment of my online time, I find myself wanting to spend less and less time there, not because I don't like it, but just because like, I don't know what it is. Like I feel being drawn out of it and the time I spend there, I don't know. It's like Facebook is really good at optimizing like unhappiness or something.
Yeah.
Like Twitter's like optimizing speed and Facebook is optimizing like unhappiness.
Yeah.
It's like really quickly getting you there. I find myself listening to more podcasts and reading more, wanting to spend less time on like really thin things that like, you know, in weeks or months or years would have no effect on what I'm doing.
Right.
But just maybe it's just like a desire for community, you know, things that last with me more. Podcasts last with me, books last with me, conversations with real people. That's part of the board game obsession too, is that like when you play board games with someone,
it's with people,
you're sitting around a table and you're talking and it's an unmediated experience other than like the game mechanics and the cardboard and paper.
Yeah. It's all in the real world.
It's all in meat space. So both that and like, I find myself, I'm not a super traditional Catholic who wants to have like Latin Mass everywhere, but I find myself desiring more of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, mm-hmm. I want the Novus Ordo Mass with like a crap ton of incense and mostly in Latin and like, you know, altar boys and all these things that like when I see a really, really traditionally celebrated Novus Ordo Mass, it feels right. Mm-hmm. And when I do that and I, you know, a couple weeks go by and then I go to maybe a different parish that has liturgical things that are just very, I don't know, they're just like not traditional.
Yeah.
It feels off. It feels wrong. And this is not a, you know, left wing versus right wing thing. And I feel like I've noticed that a lot more over the last, you know, 9 months since we've been doing this.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff on Facebook, you know, prompted by something Pope Francis said or something that like, you know, someone who's, you know, anti-Pope Francis and they're like mm-hmm. fighting about it, some sort of liturgy thing or social thing. I find myself like backing away from those conversations and not wanting to like have them because they're very rarely are productive.
Right.
They're people talking to their own people about something and people may think they're productive, but from my perspective, very few of those actually cross the aisle. And it's not that it's right and left, like it's not that clean, but just say it is for a moment. I find myself wanting to have fewer of the conversations, but just worshiping more traditionally.
Right.
And that's probably a sort of consistent outcome of all of this.
I completely agree. I mean, I would say, you know, it's tough to say how much was the process of the podcast and how much was just, I was kind of headed that way anyways.
Yeah.
I agree. I mean, as you know, like I'm a big sports fan and I used to spend a lot of time watching sports, keeping up with sports. And as of late, like I have totally left that behind for similar things, like you're saying, like in favor of reading, in favor of just spending time with friends, in favor of, you know, more podcasts and more learning. And I haven't missed it. You know, like I really haven't been longing to watch it again.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that sense, I feel very free, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then as far as liturgy, you know, same thing. I mean, I would have in college, I would have never thought that I would like fall in love with the Latin Mass, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I never thought that would be the case. I mean, I went to Latin Mass a long time ago and I honestly was lost and didn't know what to do, but just slowly but surely, I allowed myself to keep going to it and try to learn and try to to find, it's almost like to find the Mass in it. And I say it that way because...
Find the Mass in the Mass?
Yeah, because
okay.
When you go the first time, it's almost like a different religion.
Yeah.
And you begin to wonder like, you know, where's the connection between the Novus Ordo and the Latin Mass?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was only after having gone several times that I began to see it. I was like, oh, it's there. I mean, it's... The Novus Ordo is there. It's you begin to now connect the dots, you know. And I guess for me, you know, I don't go to a Latin Mass every Sunday. You know, I go to Ordinariate Mass, which is also very beautiful. But I do wish it was more common. I wish I had more access to the Latin Mass.
Yeah.
Even if I don't go every Sunday, like I just wish I could drive down to my close by parish and go to Latin Mass. And unfortunately, right now it's still kind of a chore to try to find one or you have to drive across the city which we're lucky because before it was even harder.
Mm-hmm.
So we're actually kind of blessed to have it, but there's just a beauty and an otherworldliness to the Latin Mass that I guess I've just fallen in love with.
Yeah. I hadn't really realized until we've been talking, I guess especially with Joseph too, and just like dinners and family stuff outside of the podcast.
Yeah.
How much, it's easy to look back at history, especially liturgical history, and then say, you know, we did all this stuff and then we have like the, you know, Pope, was it St. Gregory, like 1500s or whatever, codified it. And then like 1970 was the, you know, introduction of the Novus Ordo. And then we've been with that for like 50 years.
Right.
And that's it. But the reality is far more nuanced than that. And there are all kinds of things that were changing and people had heterodox ideas in the 20s and 30s and 40s before, like, you know, that was the, you know, proverbial golden era of the church.
Yeah.
And there's always been, it's always been kind of a mixed bag. I mean, in the very beginning, like, you know, Jesus had selected a like betrayer cardinal, let's say.
Yeah.
So It began with, you know, in the first 10 minutes, the church would have crumbled if we were able to do it on our own. So,
oh, sure.
But there's been so much that has been told to us that I feel like I am a novice, like I'm the baby learning about it. I've been living it my whole life, and I've been like,
yeah.
It's kind of like I've been eating the meal, and someone like opened up the menu and has explained to me how all the pieces are coming together.
Right.
And I kind of knew that like it's chicken and that's beef and this is how it comes together.
Yeah.
But it's like for the first time, I feel like I'm understanding how certain chemicals come together to make certain flavors.
Sure.
It's like the next level of understanding of all the things that have been going on. So for me, that's real exciting.
Yeah, definitely. That has been really exciting.
It also is a reminder to me of how little I know about like the liturgical history of the church and how interesting it is.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly didn't know there was so much to it.
Yeah.
I mean, again, that sounds silly to say, but there was just a point in time where I thought I understood the Mass.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just generally speaking.
Yeah, like, you know? It's not a thing that needs to be studied or further learned about. It's just, this is how Mass is.
Right.
And then you just kind of go with it.
And then you come to find out, like, there's just this whole world. But what I like something you said, which is like, you know, that you could, these conversations about liturgy can devolve into tribalism and this over, you know, this against that. The reality is that, you know, like you said, the church is a mixed bag. Nothing's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Even Latin Mass, you know, parishes are not perfect. Sorry to break it to you. And we're all sinners trying to get better. But one thing that I love about the Mass is that the Mass is the Mass, right? Like, you go and Jesus is there and you get to receive our Lord in the Eucharist, and no one can take that away from you. You know, like,
People in China can take it away from you, but we laugh. That's terrible. That's awful. Continue.
But once you're already at Mass.
Yeah.
And like, for me, when I go to the Latin Mass or just a beautiful Novus Ordo or the Ordinariate Mass, I don't think about, you know, what people are saying or what the, you know, what the arguments on liturgy are. I'm just there enjoying the Mass, enjoying the beauty of it, enjoying the presence of God, enjoying, you know, Christ in the Eucharist. And that's all that matters. You know, and so we are blessed that we have access to the Mass at all. Like you said, in China, that's not always the case.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that, you know, that's a huge overarching thing that we've been learning, an appreciation of liturgy, an appreciation of how it relates to architecture.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then even in our own lives, I feel like it's this whole world that we're just getting into for the first time. And it's super exciting.
Yeah. I mean, it makes me think of this. There was a part of a homily that Father David, now Bishop David, had said when he was at St. Mary's. There are a few things that...
Is he in Oklahoma now?
He is in Oklahoma, Tulsa.
Oklahoma.
Yeah,
okay.
Diocese of Tulsa. Bishop David is kind of a rock star. He's my... in my book, he's one of my favorite priests. I love all the priests. Well, many. I'm going to stop talking.
We love you, priests. keep listening, please.
Yeah. We'll keep that on. Bishop David had said that everything you do, and he had probably got it from somewhere else, but I'm going to go ahead and just attribute to him,
is
that everything you do outside of the Mass is preparing you to enter back into Mass.
That's cool.
So that's sort of like a different structure. It's like the source, the Eucharist is the source and summit of the faith.
Yeah.
It's like if that were an algebraic equation, you moved all the equations, all the formulas, or not, you moved all of the variables around.
Yeah.
And it's still the same thing, basically. It's like everything you do is about returning back into in the Mass. And in some way, I look back at all of our guests and
that's super cool.
With like death and dancing and music and finance and architecture and and like, you know, being predisposed to receive God's graces.
Mm-hmm.
All of these things touch on preparing you to enter back into the Mass.
Yeah.
And the liturgy really kind of is the gravitational center of our discussions.
Right.
And I intentionally say the liturgy, like it's the entire liturgical act. It's not just the act of receiving communion.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the height of the liturgy, but the act of like bodily going and communally worshiping and smelling the incense and seeing the art and praying with the rest of the people. Like it's fundamentally a public thing. It's a communal thing.
Mm-hmm.
And in some way that's the glue that binds us. Like we have, the podcast has a gravitational center. And it's got a core in the center of the star and all these other things that orbit it. And they're not the same thing, but they're all tied by like the space-time continuum of
the
liturgy.
So the liturgy is a space-time
continuum. The liturgy is a cosmic thing.
Architecture is
the
sun.
It's a cosmic thing. Cosmic, yeah.
And our guests are the star, are the planets revolving around.
Our guests are the planets,
the
yeah. And the bourbon that's drunk is the Milky Way floating between.
Yeah.
One thing that has been interesting too is are the podcasts that are in person are better. We're in Houston,
yeah.
And when we can interview someone, they come. We like pour them a drink and we talk, and that's how conversations are meant to be had. We've had some that are like long distance,
yeah.
But most of them have been in person, and that's been preferable. Yeah, I think that's something we want to continue as much as possible.
Yeah, and I mean, again, it's you know, the quote from Bishop David that you were saying is very much of the poetic mode, right? Like, it's like your entire life is about this. And you could say that in the podcast, like, personal conversation is in keeping with everything we're talking about.
Yeah.
You know? And so, yeah, I think it's a priority for us whenever we can to have the conversations in person. Sometimes we can't, but yes, I think that's a priority for us.
Yeah. Yeah. In some ways, it like that quote from the Bish is a good filter for life. Like, if you hop on Twitter, is this preparing you to enter back into Mass?
Right.
Like, maybe if you choose to follow the right people, like, every person you follow is someone who is going to occupy some of your time, and time is all you have. And the same thing goes with, like, you know, reading a book or watching a movie or being on any other social media platform. If what you're doing is preparing you to enter back into Mass, and part of the way it can be something that's productive for you is by being really, you know, intentional about how you curate, not just the platform you go into, but who you choose to engage with and follow, then it can be a really great thing. Or it can be a time suck, and it can be, not necessarily bad, but it can take away from something that's objectively good. And and therefore the Math tells you to not
do it. Yeah. So where do we go from here, Chris? What are you thinking for season two?
Well, since you've edited all of season one, we're definitely going to do season two because I owe you a season of editing.
Appreciate that.
I've had a couple ideas. In the interim, there may be some episodes where we do some different formats where we like
try some things out.
Try some things out. Maybe like read some smaller portions. I've seen some things online that are like audiobook, but for encyclicals or things that are relevant to the podcast. For books we have read, I thought we could do a little little like book review. Yeah, okay. Just like something that's like shorter, different format type, and something that's still in the orbit around the center of the star.
Yeah.
But maybe it's a different, maybe it has rings, maybe it has moons.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think there could be a potential for different podcast episode types in the interim. And then,
Different lengths.
Yeah.
You know, I think that would be good.
I think it'd be cool to do one with like a Screwtape theme.
Right.
Screwtape proposes a toast, like what we want the future of architecture to be like, so that we can,
Yeah, that'd be cool. No, I was thinking, we started asking some of our guests about a particular experience of beauty that they had. I think it would be interesting to do that, but then to make that its own episode, like a mini episode of the person maybe telling a more elongated story about an experience of beauty. And same thing for us. Like, if we visit a place, if we visit a church, if we have a striking experience, for us to just tell the story. And that's all the episode is. It's just us telling the story of this beautiful experience and how it allowed us to see God.
Yeah. Seek is going to have like a ton of people that are going to come, and like they're going for a religious experience.
Yeah.
Maybe we could like find some.
Is that
there
here in town or?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I think so.
Okay.
Here last year.
I think that because so much of this podcast is about that, it is about just how you encounter God through beauty.
Yeah, totally.
And then talking about how it was. I mean, it could be in nature, it could be in a church, it could be at home, it could just be you're sitting in your backyard looking at a beautiful sunset. So,
Indianapolis.
Indianapolis.
January,
okay.
Well, 2019 is January 2019.
Okay.
Wait, we're in 2019 right now.
We are.
Is there a 2020? Yeah. So.
Yeah, but I think as far as guests, you know, we want to continue to bring in guests that are as well-rounded as season one, you know, like artists, architects, you know, honestly, just everyone that in some way touches the realm of architecture and that informs liturgy and culture around the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
So it's, I think our goal is to continue to just bring you really well-rounded guests.
Yeah. One thing I'd like to do that we haven't done a lot of is get into the parish and talk with people in parishes.
Yes, that's probably a great idea.
Probably mostly in Houston. Yep. That, you know, the parish is the primary like institutional means of grace. Mm-hmm. And like anytime I appreciate one thing about Catholic Answers out in California is someone asks a question and the pastor is always like, well, go find your local priest. Yeah. And it's not, you know, it's just some ordinary guy who happens to be a priest of Jesus Christ who's going to like bring you into the faith.
Yeah.
So I'd like to talk with people in parishes about how they're doing it, because we can, you know, talk with people that are doing more like apostolate type work, but I'd like to talk with people that are doing what we think are interesting things here in the Archdiocese.
Yeah, and ultimately I think you and I both share this desire to make the parish, the average parish in the suburbs that we always talk about.
Yeah.
The place where people encounter beauty.
Yeah.
You know, so rather than having this idealized church that, you know, either never gets built or only gets, you know, or is this tiny church that only 800 people go to. Let's go to the place where people encounter Jesus every Sunday.
Yeah, yeah.
And let's work on that being beautiful. You know? So I think that really dovetails well with that. If we talk to the people who are on the front lines in these parishes, that's where we need to kind of be talking.
Yeah, so there are two things. I'd like to do some parish engagement and then really talk with some more people about music, because that's one of the things when we're talking with Dennis, how he said it's free to do beautiful music. You just have to have the right person and the right, you know, there are like, you know, equipment, instruments, things like that. But in terms of cost to like barrier to entry, music has the lowest barrier to entry and the greatest effect. Like it's the best return on investment. It's the
highest impact. Yeah.
So, I think that's something I'd like to talk about.
I think, you know, when you ask people, what do you do to fix liturgy? That will be the first answer every time.
Yeah.
Music.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a.
The first thing you do to fix liturgy is listen to our podcast and then talk to people about how like how to think about the term of like fixing liturgy and how sometimes it's problematic and sometimes it's not.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, when you say fix liturgy, obviously it implies that there's something wrong with it. Which, I mean, like you said, there are some places where it's already beautiful, you know, and it's and they're doing it very well.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything else seems to be good. You said we have some people that have enjoyed the,
you know, a couple more things.
Yeah.
More engagement with our listeners.
Yeah.
I think we haven't heard much from listeners and it would be great to find out like how it is that we can get in contact with them.
Yeah.
We obviously have a Facebook page. We have Twitter.
Yeah.
We have the website and it just would be nice to hear from listeners. Just how are we doing? Do you like what we're doing? What do you think of these crazy ideas we're throwing out?
And some of it's, you know, the audience is narrow. The people that have liked it really seem to like it.
Right.
And I listen to a lot of podcasts that I never engage with.
Sure. Me
like,
too.
I, you know, probably listen to like well over an hour of podcasts a day between you know, what I'm doing all over the place. I just don't engage with them. So, I got to think about like what would be a good way of going about doing that that would be helpful. Like I guess what I'm saying is I don't think because we're not getting engagement and we're not really like we've been publishing these things and we've had a few interactions, but like like maybe like one message per episode with someone who commented on something. But that doesn't mean that it's not being listened to because our stats say that we have, you know, a decent number of hits or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, some sort of like increased engagement in some way would be
right. Yeah, I mean, just because I think you and I hope that this is starting a conversation, and so
it'd
be nice to hear a little bit more. But but other than that, I think it's way better than I thought it was going to be starting out.
Yeah, totally.
Especially, I didn't think we would have any listeners, and we have a good number, so...
I think we should also maybe try to find other people that are in the podcast world and talk with them. People that are, I feel like the people we talked about wanting to get on, there are some of those people that also have shows.
Yes.
And it'd be good to.
Yeah. To connect the dots.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, totally.
And kind of like help each other.
Yeah. You
know? So we're looking forward to it. You know, I think we're not going to take too much time off. I think we're just going to jump in and keep going, but we do want to kind of bring a close to season one just to kind of package it and think of it as a thing. And then now we're starting something new that obviously is a continuation, but at the same time, we'll bring new elements and new ideas to the table.
Yeah, totally.
So thanks for listening and stay tuned for more.
Yeah. Check out season one, share the episodes that you enjoy, and let us know if you have any ideas for topics or guests or anything.
Indeed. Thank you. Over and out. Thanks for listening. The best way to enjoy the podcast is to pull up the accompanying blog post for the episode at beautyevernew.com. There you will find show notes, guest information, helpful visual aids, and more. To continue the conversation, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And let us know how you're experiencing beauty in your churches and communities.